Welcome to your future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you. At CEJA, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. CEJA's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the CEJA banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Thanks for joining me for another Yes to Life show. I'm your regular host for the show, Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, which helps people in the UK with cancer to understand and to access integrative medicine. In line with the mission of the charity, the show focuses on a very broad range of integrative medicine approaches. Today, my guest is a healer. Healing is extraordinarily popular with cancer patients, and surprisingly, reasonably easy to obtain within the cancer units of major hospitals around the UK. Anne Boone is an experienced practitioner who's agreed to tell us about what healing has on offer. I'm talking to her now over Skype. Hi Anne, great to have you on the Yes to Life show. I think this is the first time that I've done a show on healing facts. I'm really looking forward to talking to you today.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Great. So healing is definitely on the more esoteric end of healthcare, but it's hugely popular with patients, certainly at least in the cancer units that I know about. But on the other hand, there are many for whom it's a complete anathema that healers even get through the door at NHS hospitals. For them, you're right at the bottom of the barrel of complementary tosh along with the homeopaths. What would you say to such critics?
I am happy to work with them and let them feel and experience healing for themselves, to then give an assessment of their perception of what's happened. At the moment, I feel we often lack. So as you said, it's rather esoteric, and very often we have to express ourselves in esoteric words and not the scientific medical words that are often liked by people who are very critical about it. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that I would like to address. So how can we improve communication? How can we find a more common language so that we can actually explain what it is that we're doing, how we work with energy, how energy is the fundamental basis of life, and how it actually guides and balances everything that we do in our life, how we think and how we feel.
So obviously, from your perspective, it's absolutely fundamental and crucial to people's well-being that this is something that's considered as part of their healthcare.
Very much so, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, because this is the first time that we're talking about healing on the show, I want to start right from scratch and go over all that slightly esoteric terminology of healing, some of which is shared with other disciplines, such as acupuncture or yoga, and some of which is more specific to healing. Can we start with talking about your title? You are a Reiki master. What does this mean, and what's involved in becoming one?
So Reiki, as you probably realized, is a Japanese word. So it's based on a healing method, so using the inner energy from a tradition from a Japanese master. And so what is involved in becoming a master is that you you train with a master who is more experienced than you are at that point in time, who will give you an attunement. So the master would just, with the attunement, open up the physical healing energy in our bodies as the healers to enable to channel energy into our clients, so into our clients' physical body and also the esoterical and energy bodies. So that's what it's involved in terms of training. Mm.
And how long is the training course for Reiki Master?
Reiki Master is you start with an initiation weekend. Then there is also some practical training involved, both under the supervision of the master. At a first level, you can do self-healing. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly practicing on yourself, being aware of the energy flows, of how it makes you feel, all sorts of different types of changes that, however very subtle, that may occur. So it's very, very much a self heal the healer, so just basically look after yourself and practice on. I like to practice on plants. They have actually a very intense energy field around them. So that is actually the initial thing that you start off with. You're then allowed after a couple of months to do a second level, just so become a Reiki master, that then also allows you to practice on clients and help other people to feel better by rebalancing their energy.
I understand. And have you done other training towards your practice?
Yeah, so after my initial Reiki training, I also joined the College of Psychic Studies in London, in South Kensington. That is a 3-year course. So it involves basically training one evening a week. And that is the title for that particular course is Spiritual Healing. It's working with the exact same type of energy. But it is a slightly longer course. It treats also a lot of different aspects of experiences that both the healer and the client may have during healing sessions and during the process of actually becoming more attuned and open up your intuition to your own energy, the environmental energy, and the energy of clients.
Okay, I understand. And I mean, out of interest, I mean, with most practices, of course, a lot of what people are learning is actually a practical technique. How much of what you learned was some sort of practical technique?
So during our first Reiki weekend, we had to practice on each other, which scared me nearly to death.
Yeah.
Because the person... because I was told, obviously, this was going to be very beneficial and absolutely wonderful. And when I basically gradually, you know, took away my hands, I thought my fellow student, my client, had stopped breathing.
Wow.
She had been so relaxed. So she basically had a very, very intense, stressful few months prior to doing her Reiki attunement. And... it had worked so perfectly well that she was totally and utterly and completely relaxed, up to the point that I thought she'd stop breathing. The teacher thought that was very funny because she said, well, that's the whole purpose of giving somebody a healing session, relaxing them so deeply that the energy in their bodies can actually address whatever issue that there is. And so for this particular lady, it was just to completely and utterly calm down so that she could kind of reset you know, her own energies and relax and rest, basically, after the stressful period that she'd had.
I'm just particularly interested, though, do two healers do exactly the same things? Or do people do something is it much more intuitive in terms of what they actually do?
Healers work very differently because they work intuitively. We actually are at service of the client. It's the client who will receive the energy that is offered. And in their bodies, both the physical and the energy body, the energy will then rebalance and go exactly where it is needed. As a healer, we can perceive that. We can receive extra information, if you like, as it kind of goes to, you know, your organs, your abdomen, the solar plexus. But actually, you know, it is also necessary to quiet down the stomach, for example, because I'm just making it up as we go along.
Yeah.
person, you know, had some digestive problems due to stress. So my hands sometimes would be intuitively guided, you know, to the abdomen, or sometimes when holding on to the shoulders and kind of having a look inside people's energy and sort of see how they feel. My sort of thoughts will automatically be guided. I might see food. I might feel full. You know, I might sort of feel like have a bit of a bloated feeling. So I will perceive something. You know, in thought or in any kind of other sensation. What exactly is needed for that particular person, for that particular client?
Interesting. So you might experience something that kind of mirrors what they're experiencing.
That is very true. For me, I'm an emotive, intuitive healer. So I have a very, very strong, I can actually have a very, very strong connection with how people feel. So I can perceive their pain by almost physically feeling it. Mm. That is not true for everybody. Some people are very, very capable of providing the energy, of helping the clients, you know, guide them on how to use the energy in order to balance themselves and become better without actually knowing any of the information that I may intuitively feel.
Right.
But when you, to answer the question, when sometimes we can work in tandem, so you can have up to five or more healers. So often we do left and right limb, so that's four people, and then one person on the head.
Really?
And so somehow people will move as other people move. So you just know when the client is ready, all five people, without speaking, without even looking at each other, you just know what to do. You just know that it's time to grab the knee, the other person. It's a very, very beautiful thing to share, working with other healers on one particular client. And so the results, so the sessions can sometimes be very, very powerful and very intense, and the results can sometimes be absolutely astronomical. So so it's always a real pleasure to do that.
Well, I've never heard of such a thing. So is that something you've done often?
We often go to places called Reiki shares or healing clinics. Often that is on a volunteer basis.
Mm-hmm.
So where we make ourselves available to the general public. And then depending on how many clients we have, how many healers we have, you can work together. We can work on a one-to-one basis. But it's, sometimes it's fun to have a five-minute session from five healers than to have a half-hour session from one healer.
I see. Yeah. And so I would sort of guess that from what you've told me, that what people tell you about what's wrong with them is only one of the pieces of information you're using then with to do with how you actually treat them.
I often, often people when they come and see, you know, can come and see a healer, they tend to give you their entire medical history.
Right.
Which is something that obviously, because I'm not a trained medical doctor, so some healers are. So people, you know, if it makes them feel more relaxed to tell me, you know, their medical problems or the reasons, because they're often also the reasons why they're seeking help or why they're seeking healing. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely fine by me. But the information, I cannot really do much with that information during a healing session. When I connect to the person's energy, like I said, I'm a very intuitive healer. I will be guided to help them. So often people can say, for example, we associate you know, the different chakras, so the different energy openings of the body. With sort of different aspects of our life, of our being, and of what we actually meant to do in life. So the lower chakras are usually associated to our more physical needs, and so the higher up towards the head, towards the crown chakra, you go, are the sort of more emotional other needs that we as humans basically need to be fulfilled. And so you would automatically be guided to either work with a chakra, for example. People with a solar plexus, around the stomach area, it is often self-worth, how people see themselves, issues around wanting to do the things that they feel they should be doing in life, their dreams. It's about the whole holistic approach of the person. And often people, work commitments, family commitments, people forget about themselves, and that sort of that stress, you can then feel that in the solar plexus. So the solar plexus may not necessarily be balanced. The energy exchange between the solar plexus and the aura might not be, in a very effective of optimum way of working. And so this is something that we then can address,
okay.
Which then often has often. People change their lives. It has been as dramatic and drastic as a person quitting their job and saying, right, okay, I really don't like it. Mm. I just want to do something else. They come for a healing session and a week later they've quit.
Mm.
So now I don't recommend.
No, okay,
quitting for a job. But in this particular person's, in this particular case, it was actually a really, really good thing to do, because that person really did not enjoy their job.
Mm.
They didn't feel, they didn't feel appreciated. And as if by miracle, because that is sometimes how people then perceive the follow-up, they founded a new organization that they were working with, and they were so much happier there.
Mm.
So it kind of is... one door closes, one door opens, and sometimes the energy balance can give that kind of confidence to take that step to look after yourself.
Hmm. So, from what you've just told me, then I would say that you're putting what people tell you about themselves and what's wrong fairly far down the list. In fact, it's actually you're most interested in what you find out by when you actually start to work with them.
Yeah. Well. Including myself, we are also brilliant in lying to ourselves, isn't it?
Yes, just a little bit. It's true. So look, now you've already used quite a few words there, which they're more familiar these days than they used to be, but they're still pretty foreign words for a lot of people. I just want to go through some of the kind of geography of healing, if you like.
Yep.
You mentioned chakras, and there's auras you mentioned as well, and then there's meridians and chi. So do you want to just go through them and just explain in detail what each of them mean?
Yeah. So the word chi, apart from being a healer and a long career in the corporate world, my first study was Chinese. So I've learned to speak, read and communicate in the Chinese language.
Oh.
And the word qi, there is the Chinese word for energy. Energy as in electricity, energy as the energy that we generate as a human body, in our human bodies. We produce heat, we produce different types of energies, different types of qis. The meridians, I don't use them as much in healing. I sometimes perceive the energy flow through those channels, but it's very much a system that is used by the Chinese acupuncture doctors.
Yes.
So I can kind of follow the energy through the minor chakras. So the main chakras are our seven big openings. From the head over the down to the body, where they have the seventh, the root chakra. But then you also have minor chakras in the hands, in the back of the knees, in the inside of the elbows, which are also often linked to important points on the Chinese meridians. So although the systems are often very, very different, so they come from very different cultural backgrounds from different countries, they have a very, very strong connection.
Mm. So the qi and the meridians are from China, but the chakras are from India, yes?
That is correct.
Right, so let's hear a bit about chakras now. You mentioned them a lot.
Yeah. The can I do this aura and chakras at the same time?
You can. Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah. So the aura is like an so when the aura is balanced, it looks to us healers like an egg-shaped blob around us. So it's kind of like an egg-shaped energy field. Mm-hmm. That can sometimes be colored. It can sometimes give off light. So it is possible to perceive it. Some people actually physically can actually see it, see the colors, see the different layers of the aura. So the most traditional systems, they have seven layers in the aura, that they starting with the physical body and then sort of working yourself up to the most etheric, the sort of thinnest part of that sort of egg-shaped energy field around us. The chakras are so the main seven chakras are the physical connections from our body through the different layers of the chakra that will communicate from the outside chi through our aura with our physical bodies. So they are our first level of defense, if you like, against anything that comes from outside. It can be the vibrations of words. So we often did an exercise when you use very negative words, the aura often shrinks, almost as if to protect the physical body. Mm. When you use positive words, on the other hand, the aura usually becomes slightly bigger. It starts vibrating a little bit more, and people immediately start feeling happy because the aura is a lot more vibrant, is a lot more is working a lot better. When people experience intense trauma, grief, any kind of loss, often the aura will actually almost collapse inside the physical body, and that is very, very often associated to this feeling of absolute depression, of sort of total despair. And from an energetic perspective, it basically means that you've lost your way of communicating with the rest of the world, because the aura is not there anymore, and your chakras don't have a field that guides them to the outside world to actually pick up on the right type of communication and vibration, and also protection.
Right. Okay. And do you want to just describe a bit about, I mean, there are seven of these chakras and they're all different, yeah? They all have different qualities.
Yep.
Do you want to tell us a bit about those?
So depending on, there are quite a lot of different systems. Often the different chakras, they are associated with different colors. Mm-hmm. So traditionally the root chakra is red. It's associated with our basic feelings, being safe, being protected, feeling not feeling hungry. It's the very, very basic type of needs that we need to fulfill. Then the sacral chakra is often associated with orange. I was told once in a marketing meeting that orange, the reason why McDonald's used to be orange was because orange, makes us feel hungry.
Right.
Okay. It's right there, sort of in the abdominal. Mm-hmm. And it is sort of our slightly higher needs. Sort of the family, foods. The yellow color is usually associated with the solar plexus. Which is in the higher abdominal area, and as I mentioned earlier, it's about us as a being, how we perceive ourselves, what is important to us in our lives, our confidence, our happiness. That is kind of sort of often what is associated by the solar plexus. There is then the heart chakra. Sometimes people say it's more a pink type of color. Other systems say green. And so obviously the heart chakra is about love, is about self-love, is love for friends, for family, for feeling loved. The throat chakra, indigo, blue. So that is the chakra in the throat. I know it sounds simplistic, but it's about expressing ourselves. Mm-hmm. A lot of people nowadays I can feel there's a lot of clients that come with problems around the throat, because although we have a freedom of opinion, I don't think people are given enough opportunity to express themselves, so just be themselves and express themselves.
Right.
So and then you have on the forehead. So that is your also often called the chakra of the third eye, which gives you insight, intuition, and then the crown chakra is actually on the top of our head, which is our connection, our highest spiritual connection with the rest of the universe. Colors associated are sort of silvery pink. Or sort of a transparent silvery white. Mm. So that is usually that is the most traditional chakra color meanings that here in the West. Mm. So, but then sometimes when you read the original Vedic, so sometimes when I speak to some of my friends, Ayurvedic doctors, they say that may not necessarily be true. So it's an interpretation of an individual client.
Hmm. And so a fully functioning seven chakras is associated with being in very good health in body, spirit and mind. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, yes.
Right. Okay, so healing itself is all about energy, or chi, as we were saying, and... this is where the language does begin to sound a bit like plumbing, so you get blockages and energy flow and these kind of things. Would you explain what can go wrong with regard to energy and what the consequences are, and also what you can do about it?
So as I mentioned earlier, sometimes when people go to a very traumatic experience, like grief or a very intense loss, mm-hmm. The aura just may almost it may feel like it's collapsed inside the body. It usually lets us to believe that we feel thin, we have no strength, we have no energy, we have no defense, because that's literally what's happened. So our normal field of protection that is around our physical body isn't really there anymore, because it feels like it's collapsed. Well, usually it's not really that bad. That is sort of more of an extreme case, because I tend to work with a lot of people who have gone through a very intense loss, whether it's a child, whether it's a partner, or another person that they're very, very closely related to. Often, as you know, we live our lives, our daily lives. We get up in the morning, we eat, we work, we have fun, we play, we sleep. We do all sorts of things. We travel, we get tired, we get stressed. As you mentioned before, there could be slight tears in the aura that are leaking energy. It may not necessarily be perfectly nicely in balance, our lovely egg shape around our body that we need. Sometimes the chakras get blocked, or they're not really functioning as they're not nicely connected and interacting with the aura in the most efficient way. So there can be various different malfunctionings to the energetic body as much as with our physical body.
Right.
What the healer does, so what we do, is to kind of have a look around what is required, provide the energy. I often describe it as reinflating the aura. And just making sure that all the various different layers are nicely stacked on top of each other, that there is an equal amount of space between them. And then going over all the seven chakras and making sure that they're functioning appropriately, that they turn in a at a very, very nice speed, and that they're also connected to the various different layers of the aura.
Right. So your work is all in one direction, really. There's no such thing as an over-functioning aura or an over-functioning chakra. You're literally looking for deficiencies where somebody's energy is low, and you're giving them extra energy.
That is sometimes, yes, that is sometimes what we do. Over-functioning, I can understand what you mean. So sometimes people, like I said, it's usually anything that is stress-related can also provide... It is very hard to describe that, but it can be perceived as a bit of an over energetic. So where there's a very strong vibration, sometimes stress can also translate itself in sort of a smoky type of color within the aura. Mm-hmm. So there are other various different there are other ways of perceiving that there is actually an imbalance in the right. in the energy field.
So you might be actually calming something down then.
That is also very, very possible. Mm. Sometimes people, they overheat or they just feel too cold. And then you do exactly what you said. You just calm everything just to bring it up to a neutral temperature or a pleasant temperature. It is a very, very intuitive way of work. And it's very often hard to describe and saying, okay, in a healing session, I always do this. Right. Every single session that I've done in my life is very, very different. Because like I said, at the very, very beginning, I'm at service. The energy that I provide is 100% at service of my client. Mm. And so I almost, my eye, as in the healer, doesn't really come into play. Mm. I'm almost an observer of what happens with the energy that I provide.
Right. And so might it be correct to say that, in fact, you're providing balance, whatever that might look like?
That is correct. Mm. Yes.
Okay. So now we get on to maybe what it looks like for listeners who've never had healing. Could you describe what a session's like?
So I work with a client on a one-to-one level. The session takes about an hour or an hour and a half. We will discuss, as I mentioned before, often when people come for the first time, they like to talk about themselves a little bit. They have questions. So we have a 5 to 10 minute question and answer reasons why people seek healing. I prefer working with people when they lie down on a massage table. Usually cover them up with a blanket because as the body relaxes, you tend to feel a little bit cold, so that you cool off. It is also perfectly possible to sit down on a chair and relax and do a healing session in that way.
Mm, okay. And so the whole session will be spent on a massage table, and
yep.
And they are literally just relaxing the whole time.
Yes. So often when people come for the first time, they kind of want to see what's happening.
Yeah.
So they tend to sometimes look where my hands are. They want to kind of see what I'm doing. So. Often I would touch people if I'm allowed to. So I'd make sure that I touch them on the shoulders, on the arms, on the knees, on the legs, so they have a perception of where I am physically in the room. Often 15, 20 minutes later, people just give up.
Right.
They just kind of go, this is nice. I feel very nice and relaxed. And they almost fall asleep. So they you can hear, how their breathing sort of, very, very gradually sort of slows down. And then, often they just sort of switch off. That's when I'm then allowed to work with what often people call their higher self or their spiritual guides or with their energy in what is required.
Mm. Okay. And you've had a lot of healing done to you. How would you describe the experience?
It very, very much relaxes you. It will... go down to a root cause level. So whatever is happening, you get stressed. Well, why do you get stressed? Usually, it is often part of our own choice. I know we choose to do a particular job. The job stresses us out. We can also choose not to do the job. I mean, whether that's possible, physically possible, financially possible. You know, I'm just saying that often we have to work, so we get stressed. It affects our energy. Mm-hmm. It then starts affecting our physical body. After a healing session, you just feel whole again. You just feel absolutely, completely great. I often then wake up as if I've slept for a long time, or I've been on holiday.
Right.
Like you've just had a couple of very, very nice days by the beach or in the mountains or wherever your favorite place is. And I often also feel like, yeah, I can deal with life, sort of like whatever happened, that's okay. Problems seem to go away, challenges seem to kind of turn into solutions, and I can handle and I can deal with life.
Right.
So it gives you strength, energy, confidence, you're relaxed, you're happy, contentment is also a big thing. It's highly recommended, and most healers will also, you kind of work with the body often, and so you kind of give each other healing and just make sure that we look after ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And just one question, you said that obviously at the beginning of a first session, you're making people aware of what you're doing to sort of help them feel confident and relaxed. Yeah. So generally speaking, though, your hands are only close to the person. They're not actually touching.
When I work with the aura, it is very hard to do that while you touch the physical body. It's possible, but it's a lot harder. So I like to work on the level. So the aura is usually about a foot and a half away from our body.
Okay.
During a healing session, it can expand.
Okay.
So you can expand your aura as big as the universe if you like, or you can sort of retract it and just make it a little bit slower, smaller, and just basically kind of pull it closer to the body. And so I prefer to work on that level where the aura is, and the same for the chakras. So, but it's nice to start off with going around the arms and the legs, because they sort of, they're often the first sort of parts of our body that are affected from an imbalance.
Mm. Okay. So now I'd like to focus a bit on cancer. Obviously, the Yes to Life show is all about cancer. Have you worked with people who've had cancer?
Yes, I have.
Right, reasonably often?
Too often.
Too often.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, okay, well, I understand that. So so what sort of context you've been working in? You've been working privately or in a clinic or a hospital or all of the above?
So far I have been working with people privately.
Mm-hmm.
So people who have cancer or have are in the clear of cancer. People who are going through chemotherapy, if that's what they choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with people, various different cancers as well. And from the perspective of a healer, the cancer in a person's body and in a person's energy feels a little bit like, the Christmas stars, the cold fire that you get. It's like fire, but it's not real.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. Okay.
It sort of feels like it's an explosion of this sort of Christmas, that, because sometimes when it falls on your skin, it feels like it's kind of biting you a little bit. It almost looks beautiful, but it doesn't feel nice at all.
Hmm.
And often after talking to a couple of to some doctors and a microbiologist, it feels like cancer is life, but it doesn't feel like it's conscious.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's the cancer itself, you're saying. So whereas the rest of the body feels conscious, it's like an unconscious part.
It doesn't have the same consciousness as the other individual cells, because every single cell in our body will be affected by healing. And the cancerous cells, that's sort of like my perception, do not feel like they're really part of the body. They're just in that, in our physical bodies, but they do not belong there.
Interesting. So in terms of your work, if we just talk about the cancer specifically, obviously you're going, I'm sure you get asked to help with a lot of different things, but if we first of all just talk about the cancer itself then, you in a way then are describing you have a different relationship with that part to the rest of the body.
Yes.
And so how does that affect what you do or what you can do?
So often, like I mentioned earlier, what we perceive that is wrong with our bodies may not necessarily be helpful in our healing session. Often when people go through chemotherapy, that takes up a large part of the session, where I need to rebalance the physical discomfort that people go through. I sometimes kind of feel the same sort of sickness or the same sort of nauseating drain from the chemotherapy. It sort of drains the body from energy, but it also that's my perspective as well, sort of it almost like thins the aura, like the body has less energy and the aura has less energy than it normally has. So it's important that you gently, because people at that point in time they're often very, very sensitive. To also the energetic vibrations. When I work with people with cancer, we have to be very, very subtle and very, very sensitive to what it is that they need. But then, you know, we have to be a little bit slower sometimes, because people can't just kind of accept the whole energy, because it makes them feel ill or unwell, or, you know, especially during the chemotherapy. And then other times, it is almost like we're not really dealing with the cancer itself, but with another event or issue, you know, or anything else in their lives that you know may be very pressing, that may be make them feel bad. So that I actually help people more on the mental and the emotional side.
Yes. Well, these things are you know, actually a cancer diagnosis can bring some long-term life issues right up to the surface quite quickly, can't it? Because it's such a fundamental assault, if you like, on our identity and our life expectancy and all of that.
Yeah.
So what sort of issues do you think you've had the most success with healing? Is it pain? Is it the psychological issues, you know, the stress of cancer, or people's, their energy levels? Where do you think you've had the most success in helping people?
The most realistic and tangible, if you like, is when people go through a chemotherapy session. They have a healing session. They can go home. They can hold water down or any other kind of liquid, and they can sleep. So the body rhythm is not as disturbed as it sometimes can be, when they have certain chemo treatments. When people can work with me throughout the recovery of cancer, very often the underlying emotions, what you just said, like, you know, it feels like it's an attack on us. So there's a lot of anger involved. The why me, the guilt sometimes as well.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, but I sort of perceive all of these very, very negative, very, very deep and very, very intense emotions that come up with. And the, like I mentioned before, the fact that you can balance the aura, that you can make it almost, that you can make it, that you can reestablish it in such a way that they have an aura from a healthy person, may give people who battle with cancer or with the emotional symptoms of having had cancer, it may help them to actually deal with those emotional issues as well.
So maybe the right word to describe what you're giving them is resilience.
Actually, yes, that could be. I just remember a particular lady. She had four different types of cancer, I think. And in one of the last stages, it was just anger. It was just violent outbursts of anger for everything that was that she felt that was done to her, for having cancer, it was lots of different things, and that had happened to her during childhood. So it was almost like the whole life, her entire emotional life, had come up. During a few weeks that I was actually working with her, every couple of days. So that was a very, very intense kind of session that I did with her.
Mm. Yeah. It does sound intense.
Yeah. And it did help. It did actually make her feel better. You know, the doctors were very surprised. They did see a difference. So when she's had healing for a couple of weeks, they also noticed that something had happened to her that made her change her perspective, you know, that made her feel better, or more and more resilient. I think, thank you very much, Robin. I think that's a great word of describing it. Yeah.
Mm. So I've got a picture of most of these people you've described so far as being women. Yeah. And I think I wouldn't be far wrong by saying that that is the case, that most of the people who go for healing would be women. Am I wrong? Do you get a reasonable proportion of men?
Most women, I'm a woman, I can say that. Most women are being allowed to be more in touch with you know, emotions, what's going on inside in your life. So it seems to be a more natural thing for a woman to do, just to come to a healer and say, "I'm not feeling very well. Can you please help? You know, have a session." You know, it's almost part like of a girly get together. Often, you know, when a whole bunch of women sit together, you can sort of feel the energy go way up through the roofs, and everybody's laughing and having fun. So maybe it stems from there. Then on the other hand, when men have sessions, they always thoroughly enjoy it. They give me the same amount of positive feedback in terms of pain, in terms of emotions, in terms of transformation, than the ladies do.
Well, I've had healing myself, and you know, I kind of always think the men are missing a trick because it's so fantastic. I think, you know, first certain kind of circumstances for which there seems to be no other kind of no place to go particularly in terms of help, and you want something which sort of is completely coming from left field, if you like. You can't beat it. And you know, I've had some very difficult times, and it's been amazing at those times. So I would encourage any men listening who think they could maybe use it to give it a go, because I think it's great. Tell me also about the healers themselves. What proportion of the healers are men, roughly?
Oh, that's a good question. We had in the College of Psyche Studies, it's about 50-50 in terms of the teachers, people running workshops. So that sort of seems to be fairly, the sexes are fairly equally represented. I am going to say, but this is a very, very personal opinion. Hmm. It sort of feels like a quarter of men and three quarters of women.
Right. Okay. So there's a lot more probably men out there doing healing as a proportion than there are maybe men receiving healing as a proportion. Yeah. Interesting. But it does mean that you have a choice fairly easily to find either a man or a woman as a healer, depending on which you're the most comfortable with.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Yeah. Okay, well, look, we're coming towards the end. I just wanted to lastly ask you about the Relief from Pain Healing Centres that you set up. There's one in Maidenhead. I believe it's a charity. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And what do you aim to achieve through this charity?
So the charity is set up mainly because of some astonishing results with pain relief. So that can be mainly physical, like I said, it's the most tangible, And is also perceived by people in a very immediate way. Like you can go, migraines go away. I remember a lady who had split a calf muscle, who lost her balance and banged that same leg against a glass door. She wasn't screaming. I think she probably bit her tongue or something. And I was able, just with rebalancing the energy in the leg, just to make the pain go away in seconds. So that kind of got me thinking that there is something to it that we're missing. And something needs to be done to bring this back to the public, so that for those people who need it, for those people who want to try it, that they also have the ability to do so. So the healing centers are one part. The main focus of Relief from Pain at this point in time is to raise funds, mm-hmm. to do clinical research. And so we've been invited by a large trust in Surrey. So on the 1st of April in 2018, we will start in a ward where we can offer complementary therapies. Reiki healing, working with energy, is one of them. And on the back of that, what we'd like to do is to look at to compare the medical records. So the clinical notes that doctors and nurses will make about about patients and the treatments that they receive is to understand, after 4 or 6 months, to understand if there is a difference in how people feel, how people recover, how people heal, mm-hmm. between those patients who received healing and those patients who chose not to. Mm. So we'd like to see in an unbiased way from the clinical information on the back end, in the big architecture, the big IT architecture systems of the hospital, we would like to sort of see if there's a difference.
Fascinating. Well, that'll be a great study. I'd love to hear if that gets underway, and if it does, when you're likely to have some results. Look, we're going to have to finish. I feel like there's plenty more I could talk to you about. It's been really interesting, Anne. I think there'll be many listeners who found that interesting and helpful. So big thank you to you for coming on the show.
Thank you very, very much, Robin. Thank you, for all the great work that you do with Yes to Life, and, allowing people like myself and many others to come and explain how we help people, look after their health and their well-being.
Great, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
As I mentioned, I found healing very helpful at some critical moments in my life, so I hope today's interview will encourage some of you to want to give it a go. As usual, look on yestolife.org.uk for details of resources mentioned in today's show. Just click the link on the homepage to the Yes to Life Show info page. Thanks very much for listening today. If you're not already a regular listener, I hope you'll want to listen again next week, when my guest will be the highly experienced nutritional therapist, Liz Butler. Goodbye.